driving you home every afternoon. This is the 3HL with Brent Daugherty and Don Davenport.
HL on 104.5, the Zone. Brent Daugherty, Don Davenport with you till 6 o'clock. Bruce Feldman coming up. We'll ask him about his thoughts on what's going on at the University of Tennessee. He's written a lot about it. We retweeted a story that he wrote that he put out there in anticipation of his visit with us. So we look forward to always visiting with Bruce Feldman. Really, really good dude. Florida ran Tennessee last night, number 6 Tennessee. I should point that out. They will not be number 6 anymore. 75-49. They lost by almost 30 points. And you could tell, a lot like the Alabama game, you could tell in the first 3 minutes that Tennessee didn't have it, that they were just wandering around aimlessly through the forest looking for food, and they just weren't going to get it. They shot 29.3%. I think that's the worst field goal shooting percentage for Tennessee in like 20 years. They were 3 of 18 from 3. Barnes went scorched earth in the presser. He said a lot of things, including this. I can tell you this. It makes me sick to watch a group of guys not play hard. As a coach, it's probably the hardest thing to stomach when you know the other team is playing harder in every facet of the game, beating you every which way, and you don't respond. That's how I felt tonight anyway, and that's the most disappointing part of the game. He also said, we just weren't very good, just really disappointed. I can tell you this. I don't know what it's going to be, but I will change our lineup. It will be changed because I'm not going to let anybody take anything for granted, thinking they were just going to walk out there and play and show up and think we're good enough. That's what I felt tonight. I don't want to take anything away from Florida and Mike White because they've had a hard year with a lot of different things that they've had to go through. They deserve to win the game from the start to the finish, but I'm not going to watch us do this. I felt like we had too many guys that felt like, okay, I've got to play. I was proud of Ticket. That's Devontae Gaines. I mean, I think he ended up being our leading rebounder. He was. He played 15 minutes and had 5 rebounds. Eves Pons played 33 minutes and had 4 rebounds. Rick Barnes, that's part of what he said too, Don, was Eves Pons has 2 jobs, to play defense and to rebound the basketball. And he said he got out-rebounded by Devontae Gaines in this game. He talked about the same thing with Fulke. He said that Keon Johnson, one of the freshmen, is having a hard time understanding the concept of the pick-and-roll defense and that he would roll off with a guy and then just leave him in the paint and they would throw it in for a dunk. It's funny. Like I've seen Pat Summitt have press conferences like that, but there are very few coaches that will go into a press conference and basically just go scorched earth on their team and tell you everything that he probably said in the locker room.
Well, actually, it was probably toned down a little bit in that press conference, I would think. But yeah, I mean, but you look at Florida. I mean, that was a Florida team that was shorthanded too. They didn't have their big man, and Tennessee just got absolutely dominated in the paint. And I think and what do we always say? I mean, this is like the old adage that everybody says, that rebounding is effort, right?
Yeah, especially offensive rebounding. They had 11 of them early.
Yeah. Shoot, 12 in the first half. 12 offensive rebounds for Florida in the first half alone after 18 missed shots. So, yeah, when you look at those numbers, I mean, it speaks to the lack of effort that he's talking about. 44 rebounds, 42 points in the paint for Florida. I mean, that's bad. So you had mentioned this earlier, one game, just in that one game, in that letdown there, is this team now all of a sudden not a Final Four team? Because we were talking, now you did say leading into this game yesterday, you know, hey, they're not playing well right now. There's some issues here. You had said that heading into that game last night, but you know, one game, does that change your mind? Is this no longer a national championship contender? Is this no longer a Final Four team?
Well, one thing that's interesting is the two games they lost, Jaden Springer didn't play. I mean, that if you're looking for a connecting element to these two performances.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to read too much into that because Alabama is the best team in the conference and it's not close.
Right.
I mean, I watched some of what they did.
And they're showing it in week in and week out.
Yeah, I watched some of what they did to LSU last night. They hit 23 threes. I mean, John Petty's ridiculous, but the whole team is. And they won 105-75, and it wasn't that close. They were up 40 early in the second half. And they're really good. Florida, not as good at all. But they played with a lot of emotion last night, and they really brought it. But as you said, they this is a 3-3 team in the conference. They were without three starters. I think this one had more to do with Tennessee, but their inability to stop penetration is a problem on defense, especially when Pons is not in the game, which I said yesterday. So, you know, when Rick Barnes gets upset with his guys, he will start putting people in, like Devontae Gaines, who for most of the season would get in at the last second. Yurosh would get in at the last second. He was in the first half. That guy can't rebound a basketball. Like, I would out-rebound that guy. And I know he's 7 feet tall, but he's just, I mean, there's quick twitch and then there's Euros and it's not close. So the other thing is that, and I said this yesterday too, they have way too many gaps in terms of scoring the basketball right now. So, I mean, it's funny, like that we talked about this stuff yesterday before this game.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that they would win a close game because JT brought up the point spread being 7 and thought that was weird. I thought that they would win, but by less than that. So I would have won my bet. I didn't bet on it, but you just, the range of play for this team makes you nervous. So when they play well and they're scoring the basketball and they're moving the basketball on offense, yeah, they can be a top four team. They can. I've watched other teams around the country and, you know, Tennessee at like 75% of what they are to 100% of what they are is a really good basketball team. The problem is they show the other side too much. And even in the Vanderbilt game, when they, like, if you just look at the score, oh, Tennessee won by 20, they were up by 4 in the second half. So there were gaps in that game too. And Vanderbilt's not good at all. Right. Like, so there are issues with this team. Can they get to the Final Four? Yeah. But I'll tell you this, they made me nervous.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
can't trust them.
Can't trust them. But what's funny is like Kansas is in the top 10 and they threw out a performance like this against Texas, but Texas is a really good team, but they lost by 30 at home. I don't know. It's a weird year for sure. For sure. But I guess ultimately what I'm saying is I don't know what to think about Tennessee basketball right now.
Yeah. I mean, can you liken it to, I mean, this is kind of random, but can you liken it to the Steelers this year from a standpoint of, oh, okay, they're great, they're great, they're great. And then it was like week 13 when they lost to Washington and it was, that team's not great.
I think the biggest, I don't know. I think the biggest problem that Rick Barnes has with this group is that they think they can walk out on the floor and beat people. But
like overconfidence, but maybe?
Yeah. Like yeah. They could show up and he even said that in his press conference. And man, my 14-year-old was getting tired of me saying that last night, but I was saying, like, I don't mind like the teams that I follow to lose, but this is a life thing for me. Like, if you don't do it because of lack of effort, that's a whole different thing. If you shoot your shots and you play your game and you play hard and you exhibit energy and get beat, then that happens, right? But if you walk out there and you're a bunch of zombies, like, why'd you even make the trip? You know?
Yeah.
So that part of it frustrates me when I see teams that are good, but go out there and just kind of walk around and go through the motions. That drives me crazy. Which is funny because I was that kid in high school that had like really high standardized test scores and like really average grades. Uh-huh. And my mom would always be like, what, why? And I'd be like, I don't know. But it's funny because like
you
now
bored. You get bored. That's
I'm,
all.
Now I'm so competitive. I would have freaking crushed it, but I don't want to go back to school. I'm good. I don't want to Billy Madison myself. O'Doyle rules.
Back to school.
Yeah. When we come back, let's get a little national perspective on what that view of Tennessee and where they are is, because sometimes we get a little into the bubble. Let's break free from that and see what national guy thinks. Bruce Feldman, covers college football for The Athletic, joins us next. 3HL on 104.5, the Zone, Brent Daugherty, Don Davenport with you. Tennessee needs an AD if you're in the market. They need a head football coach, too, if you know anybody. They're hiring. Let's get a little national. Yeah, again, this is cyclical. Let's get a national perspective from our friend Bruce Feldman with Vox Sports, covers college football for The Athletic. Just did a piece on this. I'm certain you will do more pieces on this, Bruce. Is that safe to say?
I would think so, guys. Yeah, I don't think things that around Tennessee are going to be resolved anytime soon. It's crazy what a mess this keeps. It gets messier and messier, I feel like, as time has gone on. It has not gotten better. It's actually found some way to get worse.
It's early, Bruce. It's early, yeah, it's now. Early. Hang on.
Head coach, two assistants fired for cause, seven staffers fired, a legend retires from an AD role. Have you ever seen a program hit itself harder over the head in one day than Tennessee did Monday?
No. I mean, that press conference was a spectacle. I mean, you're watching the chancellor and the university president and Phil Fulmer sit there on a stage. And on one hand, they are talking, the chancellor's talking about a bunch of level one and level two violations, which are very strict by NCAA standards. You have not just the head coach getting fired, but nine staffers in the football program getting fired. You usually never hear something about that kind of level of scandal that they are talking about. And then at one point, I think it was my colleague, David Ubbin, who covers UT for The Athletic, asks about Jeremy Pruitt. And Phil Fulmer starts talking about what was good was recruiting, you know, and yet at the same time, recruiting is part of why this whole scandal is there. And so, you know, you have them talking about integrity and you're looking at it and they're praising Phil Fulmer as if he was some kind of savior or something, when he was the one who handpicked Jeremy Pruitt. And you're looking at this from, you know, going, man, do these people completely tone deaf? You know, this is as ridiculous and what a clown show the last coaching search was. And now they're at this point where they're in an even bigger ditch, because now they're going to try to hire somebody in, you know, mid to late January at the earliest. And they're going to have a dark cloud of an NCAA scandal hanging over the job. It's just, it's remarkable in its ineptitude there.
So Bruce Feldman with us. Before we kind of jump into some of the names that are floating around and what Tennessee fans would want and all of that, you just went through all of that. You mentioned possible NCAA sanctions. We're hearing bits and pieces of some key players eyeing that transfer portal out in Knoxville. We talk about what a mess it is, and this what had just happened 3 years ago as well. So when you look at Tennessee and you look at Tennessee football, why would somebody want to take this job?
You know, I think you'd have to have somebody who is either desperate in their hope of getting a big SEC job. And look, Tennessee has really good facilities still. It has obviously great history, albeit a long time ago now. So there is that. But having said that, I think that unless you have some kind of big connection to Tennessee and Tennessee's history, I think it's going to be a stretch for somebody who has some good coaching stock at this point to go, you know what, I'm going to take a jump and I'm going to take that job. By the way, that job that I have no idea how bad the NCAA sanctions are going to hit. That job where I do not know if it's going to be gutted by the roster because players are going to say, hey, I don't want to stick around here because this is going to be a program that's probably going to get hit hard by the NCAA, and I don't want to be around when that happens, because people have seen what it is like when you go to a program that is reeling from NCAA sanctions. And by the way, this isn't like speculation now in terms of just from like rival coaches. When you have the chancellor of the university go on a stage and talk about level one and level two violations, and when you have seen 10 football staffers, including the head coach, get fired like this, there's a reason for those players to be very disturbed about the short-term future of the Tennessee football program. So, you know, I think there's a, we saw Tennessee couldn't give that job away at some point 3 years ago, and that was without the NCAA issues. So again, and one other thing to keep in mind is if you are a head coach with some options, you know, you could look and say, hey, you know what? I know, because all industry sources are telling us that next year, after the 2020 season, there's going to be a big hiring cycle. You probably will have better job opportunities if you're a coach with any kind of profile to sit out and ride out where you're at and then look at what your options are going to be next winter, as opposed to jumping on this one where it's going to be really some blind faith and you got to keep your fingers crossed that, you know, that things won't go so heavy on Tennessee.
Obviously, you mentioned top facilities there. It's still a big job in the SEC, so they do have that going for them. Curious, does it help them at all that they, with the NCAA, with possible sanctions coming, that they cleaned house, that they got rid of 10 coaches, that they did the investigation themselves? Do they get any leeway with that?
They might if they're being, you know, totally transparent and proactive on it. The problem is going to be, you know, the fact that 10 coaches were fired, this isn't like one guy being a fall guy or two. And if you're having the head coach get blown out of there too, that could be pretty damning. I'm trying to think of what a parallel when you've had that many people who are seen as cheaters or as bad actors or are caught, what that leads to in the NCAA. We just don't know. Right. Mm-hmm. But when they're talking about,
because Will Wade's still coaching at LSU, so we just don't know.
We don't know. And again, for it to be this widespread, we've seen a lot of coaches get slapped on the wrist. Usually don't see this many caught up in a widespread scandal. And it'll be fascinating to see what they were caught doing, that they made all these changes and they, you know, fired Jeremy Pruitt, making this case for cause. And now we think, from the language of Jeremy Pruitt's attorney and the statement they put out a couple days ago, that there's going to be pushback, so you're going to get a lot of stuff that could surface in this back and forth that could get even uglier.
Bruce Feldman from The Athletic with us in Fox Sports as well. And that leads us to the question about Pruitt being fired for cause. Obviously, looking to get out of paying that buyout. Pruitt has legal representation. Neither side, Bruce, wants this thing anywhere near a courtroom and answering questions under oath. How do you see the money part of this parting of ways working out?
Yeah, to me, this was the head scratcher, because we saw South Carolina rally to get $15 million to get rid of Will Muschamp. You saw Auburn pull up $21-plus million to get rid of Gus Malzahn. And by the way, Auburn, my understanding of the contract is they had to raise that money in a hurry as part of that settlement. Whereas Tennessee, you're talking about $12 million. By the way, you know, the fact that they extended his deal not that long ago only looks more, you know, bewildering for them and embarrassing. But were they, you know, if you're looking at this from the outside saying, was Tennessee, you know, the athletic department, were they so broke at that point that they couldn't say, you know what, this guy's only been here 3 years and year three was in a pandemic, but we just, let's get rid of him and we'll eat the $12 million. It was bad business on our part. But again, it's less than South Carolina. It's much less than Auburn. And be careful what you wish for. Now they're in the middle of this where they are airing all kinds of ugly, dirty laundry. It's going to make their next head coaching hire that much harder to be made. And who knows how heavy the sanctions are going to end up ultimately being. So, you know, I don't know if they just felt like they had no other choice to do this. I mean, it's $12 million. It wasn't $25 million if you look at a big picture. I mean, to me, that speaks to, they felt like they had no other choice because they were being told there was some really, really egregious stuff. And we'll see how many, you know, if it really ends up staining and compromising a bunch of the players they already have, as you guys mentioned. I mean, it wouldn't be a stretch to see a bunch of people jumping in the portal now or trying to get out of their letters of intent from like a month ago, just because they didn't sign up for this knowing that they're going to go to a program that's having, you know, 10 coaches fired in a scandal and an NCAA investigation coming down heavy.
Bruce Feldman with us on 3HL. We'll get into the coaching thing. And I think you're right with regard to the players. You know, the transfer portal news comes out like a couple of days after players put their name in. So I heard today that you will hear a bunch of names in the next couple of days. I'm glad you brought that up. Bruce, how challenging will it be? We're talking about the football program and the football side of things. But before we get into coaches, how challenging do you think it'll be for Tennessee to secure a qualified AD that would want any part of this?
I think it'll be easier for them to hire a capable AD than it will a football coach. And here's why. For the AD, obviously there's a lot more that goes into it than just football, but I feel like usually ADs do not get run in and out after 2 or 3 years. Like, you know, you can talk to people about, they're going to say, oh, well, you're going to hire the next football head coach and the expectations are going to be toned down because look what the mess they're inheriting. Look what they're taking over. And while there may be a little bit of truth in that, and maybe they'll get signed for a 7-year deal as opposed to a 5-year deal, the reality is when you have some football coach start going 4-8 because they have hardly any players because of what they've inherited, and it happens for a couple of years, those expectations completely get normalized. People can say that, oh yeah, the expectations have changed. They're not going to. You still have a 100,000 seat stadium to fill. People are not going to be that patient. It's just not in their nature. They may be that for a year, but what, you know, Derek Dooley once talked about a year zero year. That was in his own imagination, right? It didn't take long for people to turn on Jeremy Pruitt and kind of look at it and go, all right, you know, you lost to Georgia State, who was 2-10. At that point, I think his seat started to get a little warm and people started to realize, hey, we may not have the guy who's capable of getting it done here. And so I think from all that, I just feel like if you're an AD, you look at the situation big picture wise, and I think you see, I'm not saying it's entirely rational thought that will go into it, but I think you see a little more of a measured approach. And I think if guys look at it, and again, I think they'll be concerned about the leadership, but I think if you're an AD, you have probably less bottom line worry about what am I inheriting from a wins and loss standpoint as opposed to that. And I think you have the chance to go in there and clean things up as opposed to, you know, to me, there are less AD big jobs out there than there are coaching jobs because there's so much more coaching turnover in college football than there is AD. So that's why I think it's probably a little easier to hire an AD than it's going to be to hire a qualified football coach to take this.
Bruce Feldman with us wrote an article on this for The Athletic. Go check it out. It is a great read. And Bruce, you wrote this in here. 2 months ago, the guy I thought would be the obvious choice was Liberty's Hugh Freeze, who dreamed of the Vols head coaching job before he had ever coached a college game. That name would certainly excite Tennessee fans, but you say not going to happen. Take his name out of it. Kind of dive into that.
Yeah, I think, John, this is a non-starter at this point. Look, Hugh Freeze, and I've known him for a long time, long before he'd ever become a head coach in college football. And I know he dreamed of being the Tennessee head coach one day. I think Hugh Freeze would be able to get it going probably faster than any coach realistically they could get. And you mentioned what he did at Liberty. The problem is for Hugh Freeze and for Tennessee in regard to him is, he got fired from Ole Miss in a full-blown scandal. There was off-field conduct issues, obviously, we know about, and then there was NCAA issues. And the reality of this is when, you know, like, let's just pretend that, you know, after that press conference, at one point they talked about how important integrity was. Can you really preach about integrity and then turn around and hire Hugh Freeze when you know why he got run out of the SEC just a few years ago? That's a tough sell. But even if they get beyond the optics of that, I don't see Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, letting that happen. I just think, even for him, I think he would go, well, you guys can't do that. I think the SEC commissioner's office has weeded out some people that some schools have wanted to hire in other capacities before from an ethical standpoint. I just can't see him letting that happen. It just doesn't seem like something that he would want them to do. And I think ethically, and I think optically, it's just something he would get in the way of if it started to go that direction.
Bruce, I wouldn't be surprised if this thing got down to names like Jamie Chadwell and Will Healy, guys like that, just because of everything you've talked about, and the dumpster fire that it is. Not that those guys aren't great coaches. I'm just saying what you said, that you know, if somebody wants into the Power Five or the SEC bad enough, you know, maybe you get down to that list. Billy Napier, you mentioned in your piece, wanted no part of Mississippi State, Auburn, South Carolina. It seems like he's waiting for something. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it got down to Jamie Chadwell and Will Healy. What do you think?
I would agree. I mean, those are the names that I think the most viable names that, and I had wrote about in the story at The Athletic, was Jamie Chadwell, obviously a Tennessee native, has done really well at Coastal. Now, and he's a good offensive coach, which, by the way, that sounds really good for a program that's not been very good on offense for quite a while. So he would make some sense. The question is, on Jamie Chadwell especially, he could wait another year. He's still got, you know, his quarterback as a freshman was really good. He has another really good year. He could probably get a more desirable situation than taking a Tennessee program that is going to be hobbled. I mean, there's no way around it in terms of that. I mean, does he want to buy in and take his shot? Because he, you know, again, this is a guy who's never had a Power Five job in any capacity. Is he going to take his shot at Tennessee when Tennessee is not at full strength? Maybe. Maybe that's it, much in his dream job that he wants to do that. But you're not getting the Tennessee that you grew up rooting for, or even the Tennessee that you remembered even Lane Kiffin and Butch Jones had. You're getting a Tennessee in a different place. I think Will Healy did a really good job at Austin Peay. He's a young coach, obviously. He's at Charlotte. I think, you know, he's honestly a little more of a gamble than Jamie Chadwell is at this point. But I think it would be hard for him to say no. A couple other guys I think would be interesting here. Bill Clark at UAB, 52 years old. He's a little older than those guys, or a lot older than Will. He's done a really good job at UAB, at a place that he has dealt with disarray and has thrived in that. I think Bill Clark would be a strong option for them. And I think Lance Leipold, who has won 6 national titles as a D3 coach and is now at Buffalo. Now, Lance Leipold has no real connections down there. He's never been around the SEC, but he has won everywhere he's been. Lance Leipold's also in his late 50s. I don't think this is a guy. I think he would have to listen and consider it, and I think you'd get a proven head coach. What they just had in Jeremy Pruitt, take out the, you know, even the scandal part of it, you had a guy who was learning on the job. I think these other guys, I don't think you can, if you're Tennessee, you can go hire somebody who doesn't really know exactly what they're doing as a head coach, because you just saw what happened and it didn't go well. Look, they hired a guy who was in over his head in Derek Dooley, and that was a disaster. I mean, hire somebody who is a proven good head coach. And I think those last two guys I mentioned, both in their 50s, both have been head coaches for a while and done good jobs at places that are not easy to win. I mean, it's really hard to be pretty good at Buffalo, and Lance Leipold did that. I mean, the one wild card name that I had heard last week as an option was Bill O'Brien, who's obviously now he's with Nick Saban, but I had always heard that some people who are influential in the Tennessee process really like Bill O'Brien. But I just don't know, if you're Bill O'Brien, you sit there and do you consider a job like Tennessee in the state it's in? I mean, he dealt with the Sandusky mess fallout at Penn State, which was really unique, did it for 2 years and then jumped to the NFL. If you're Bill O'Brien, you just say, hey, I'm going to stay at Alabama, ride this Nick Saban thing through, and I'll probably get a way better job a year or two from now. So I think it comes back to the Bill Clark, maybe Lance Leipold, or Jamie Chadwell and Healy. I think that those are the realistic options. But you're going to have to do some selling on those guys, especially yep. Jamie Chadwell, to convince him this is the place you should take your shot at in Power Five football, because you probably will get a less uphill climb job a year from now if you stay at Coastal.
when you mention a proven head coach, well, there's one floating around that had some success on the plains there, named Gus Malzahn, who I think would be interested in the job and isn't a guy that wants to sit around and not coach this year. Obviously, you'd have to get rid of Kevin Steele there at Tennessee. Those two aren't going to work together again. But what is your take on a Gus Malzahn hire at Tennessee?
John, the reason why I didn't think Gus Malzahn would be in play is what you just said. I don't know how, and Kevin Steele's hire didn't come out of the blue. It was like something that myself and some of my colleagues have been hearing for a week or two. I don't think you're at a place at Tennessee that turns around and hires Kevin Steele for kind of no apparent reason on the surface when they hired him, meaning it wasn't like he was going to be the defensive coordinator at that time that they were looking. They clearly knew something was afoot, that they wanted somebody to be kind of the bridge and hold the thing together. Do you make that guy, do the same people who say, I'm going to hire Kevin Steele for that, then all of a sudden turn around and hire the guy to take over to be somebody that you would not think Kevin Steele or Gus Malzahn would be on the same page with, that given how things imploded at Auburn? So that was why I just don't see Tennessee going in the direction of Gus Malzahn. Considering the Kevin Steele component that is tied in at Tennessee. Clearly there's people, and I know Phil Fulmer's one of them, but clearly there's people there who really value and want Kevin Steele around, and I just don't know how you square that and then come back to Gus Malzahn in any capacity.
Bruce Feldman with The Athletic. On the way out, Bruce, a lot of people throwing out another name, and he's got no coaching experience whatsoever, but fans love him. Jason Witten. Any – I don't think there's anything there, but I'm curious to get your take on that.
Yeah, look, I mean, I've heard that Peyton Manning is going to have a lot of influence in the direction and as much influence as he wants to have. But that's one thing to have influence in the decision. I mean, Tennessee hired a unproven head coach and now is in a bigger ditch than before. I get it. People can love Jason Witten, but the idea that somebody who has never been a college head coach and really never been a coach, even if you're a great player, it's a lot different to run a program, especially when you're talking about running a program now that is mired in a scandal. I mean, it's been a long time since Jason Witten was around college athletics on a day-to-day basis. A lot has changed since Jason Witten was a great player at UT. A lot has changed, honestly, in like the last 6 years, much less the last like 16 years, just in how college athletes operate and college athletics is going to be handled. I think that would be, you know, like this is not a knock on Jason Witten. I would say this about any terrific former player who has not worked in college athletics for a decade plus or at all, is it'd be hard to take over the job on good footing. I think when you're coming out of a scandal and coming out of complete disarray, you know, that would be probably the worst kind of hire you're getting, because then you're getting somebody who does not know what they're really getting into. They're going to have to learn on the job, and they're going to have to do a lot of crisis management. And, you know, I get it on some way. You know, a lot of times I feel like Tennessee has made some of these moves where they're, you know, whether it's bringing Fulmer back or, you know, it just feels like they've kind of made their own problem worse by trying to hire something, by trying to make some move that they think will make the fans happy for 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden it just makes their problem worse. I mean, and that's why this thing just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. They compound it with spectacularly bad decisions. And again, that's not a knock on Jason Witten. I just think it's like, find somebody who has proven that they are competent. Find somebody that's proven that they are competent. They know what they're doing. And then take a chance on that. Anytime they get near competence, they seem to just, you know, throw it out the window.
Good stuff, Bruce. I appreciate you, man. Hey, next time we see you, we'll have a bag of McDonald's money for you.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, right,
Bruce Feldman with The Athletic. Interesting. Jawan Jennings has posted something about Pruitt on Instagram. We've got that for you next. 3HL 104.5. 3HL on 104.5 The Zone. Todd Furman coming up at 5:15. You are going to want to hear what Todd Furman has to say about these games coming up this weekend. We've also got a little octagon battle to discuss with him as well, and we'll go from there. Juwan Jennings posting on Instagram about Coach Pruitt, and the picture is of the Jumbotron at Neyland Stadium with a picture of Juwan Jennings hugging Jeremy Pruitt on senior day, I guess. Actually, I think that's after the Vanderbilt game. Anyway, the best coach that brought the best coaching staff to Tennessee. It's a shame how people can turn on you so quick. Should be quickly. Only wanted to help the kids. Didn't matter. Didn't matter if you were a walk-on or not. Wishing you the best, Coach Pruitt. Juwan Jennings giving some props to his former head football coach. There will be player
surprise
movement
there, obviously, because Pruitt brought him back, you know. Yep. And remember, we had Pruitt on when Casey, his wife, was pregnant, and he said, yeah, we talked about possibly picking a name for our baby after Juwan Jennings. So they were pretty close.
Yep. So that makes sense. Speaking of players, there will be player movement at Tennessee. You're going to see a bunch of stories about that, a bunch of tweets about that. So just prepare yourself. If you're a Tennessee fan, that's coming. It usually takes a couple of days for those names to get out there when they go into the portal. There have already been, what was the number I counted the other day? 14?
14, yep.
With one coming back, actually two coming back, so 12, and then picking up a quarterback from Virginia. Anyway, it's hard to keep up with all this. It's going to get harder in the next couple of days. I heard that today. Also, five-star defensive end linebacker rush specialist, I guess, Dylan Brooks. Wants out of his letter of intent with Tennessee. Brooks was the Vols' highest-rated signee this season, and Big Cat Bryant deleted his commitment to Tennessee tweet. So there's that. Whoa. Shelton Felton was his high school coach and a big reason why he went to Auburn and then a big reason why he went to Tennessee. And Shelton Felton, one of the two assistants fired for cause by Dondi Plowman, the chancellor. When we come back, Trey Wallace, here's his tweet. The University of Tennessee has released this statement to me regarding the future compensation of AD Philip Fulmer when he steps away from the position. They anticipate paying him this through December 31st, 2023. We've got that for you next. Stay tuned. 104.5 The Zone.